hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Body Mechanic Podcast with Rob Arnold from Chrysalis Fitness Training. And we have a special guest this week as well. We have Andy Neal from the West Mercia Search and Rescue Group. We'll be talking to him a little bit later, but first of all, why is Andy here, Rob?
I think we mentioned it a few episodes ago about me doing a bit of a challenge. So this summer, I'm doing 2 100-mile runs. I mean, when I signed up for them, I think it was a bit of an ego trip. But I've decided to do it for charity. One of the charities is Hope House Children's Hospice, which are based in Oswestry and in North Wales as well. And they do some fantastic work. Hopefully we can get someone from there to come and talk to us as well. And the other one was West Mercia Search and Rescue. And I met Andy through a business networking group. And I didn't really know anything about Lowland Search and Rescue before. Everyone's heard about Mountain Rescue, and he's done a few talks, and it's put the charity in quite an important light to me. And I think the work they do is really important. So I just want to get some information, everyone knows what they do and why they should help out their local search and rescue.
Okay, let's quickly just talk about the run. Although you say you'll probably walk quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
So you're doing two of these. One is in the Brecon Beacons, the other one is in Snowdonia. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the first one, that is in the Brecon Beacons, and it goes along Beacons Way. Starts in Abergavenny and just goes for 100 miles. And then the second one is 6 weeks later, and that's in September. And that is from Betsy Coed. And then it's got some really convoluted route. It goes all over the place, so I can't really tell you where it goes, but if you want to look, they're from GB Ultras, but it goes from Betsy Coed down the A5 over Trafan, up over Snowdon, then back round and some other way. So I've got 40 hours to do the first one, 42 hours to do the second one.
Just to stroll through the countryside then, really?
Yeah, I might just take a picnic.
I think that's a very good idea. And how's the training going at the moment? Or do you want to talk about that a bit later?
We can talk about it. Up and down. So we spoke about...
Well, you're going up and down hills, so yeah, that's probably the way it works.
Yeah, we spoke about my digestion issues in the past. There's a few digestion things going on. But it's not too bad.
Are you sticking to the plan that we talked about?
I am not. But we're quite fortunate that we live in Shropshire, so we've got the Wrekin, the Shropshire Hills, and then Wales isn't too far away. So a couple of weekends ago, I went over Snowdonia. I didn't do Snowdon, I went the opposite way. I went north instead of south from the A5. That was just to get a little bit of walking done with a friend. And then I've been doing some hill reps on the Arkle and the Wrekin, and also doing some kettlebell work as well to work on my lower body.
Right, okay, so there is some training going on.
And there is some training, yeah, yeah. I've even adapted the treadmill at home so I can rest my laptop on it, so I can do some work and walk at the same time.
Okay, then, so two charities you're running for, the hospice.
Yeah, so Hope House Children's Hospice.
Okay,
They have got a different name as well, but it's in Welsh and I'm not even going to try and pronounce it.
No, I think that's probably a good idea. And the second one, of course, is the West Mercia Search and Rescue.
Indeed.
And we have Andy Neal from West Mercia Search and Rescue with us here in the studio today. We thought we'd bring him in. One, because obviously Rob is raising money and you can sponsor Rob to help raise money for the charities. But secondly, to tell us a little bit about what West Mercia Search and Rescue actually do. So, hi, Andy. Nice to have you along.
Hi, Mark, and thanks for having me. I've known Rob for a little while, and he got pretty interested in the rescue team. And as I did my talks, I realised that people don't really know who we are. And a lot of people have heard of Mountain Rescue, but we are Lowland Rescue. We are part of a national organisation. But the main difference is, I mean, just a quick outline. Obviously, you have the Lifeboat Association look after the wet bits, Mountain Rescue look after the hilly bits, and then imagine the bit all in between the middle, that's what we look after, apart from the underground bits, which have a specialist cave rescue team. So in our area is West Mercia. We have 6,500 square miles that we cover, from up near Oswestry all the way down to virtually to Ross-on-Wye, Hereford. And if you can imagine that in on the map, you'll realise that actually there's a river that runs right down through the middle of that. That's the River Severn. And that river is a focus of a lot of our activity, because not only do we do land searching and rescuing and finding, but we also do an awful lot of work on the water. We have a kayak team, we have a boat team, powerboat team, we're often called in by the police when somebody's gone missing in the river. And unfortunately, that often means that we're recovering bodies from the river. As a voluntary organisation, we can't really respond as quickly as, say, the fire service can. And so the fire service get called out initially if somebody's in the water and hopefully find somebody alive. If they then find that or can't find anything, they will call us in, because that enables them to go back onto emergency call, and then we're left to manage and run the search to actually try and find whatever's in the water. I think the other big difference between us and Mountain Rescue is that Mountain Rescue often have people who have gone missing. Perhaps they've fallen, they know where they are, they've been navigating, they might have broken something, and they will want rescuing. And so they will phone up, often be able to give a location, and then they can be rescued, brought down off the mountain. We are looking for people who most likely don't want to be found. So our skills are in how to find people who don't want to be found. So it could be somebody who's left a suicide note and has gone off to carry it out. It could be somebody who's got dementia who hasn't got a clue where they are, or it could be somebody with mental health issues, or a young child who can't respond. So that's the big difference. And so our skills are around planning and organising searches so that we can find people in on land, in dense areas of woodland, in the hills that we've got around here, and also obviously on the water. There is one other aspect of our team which is interesting, is that many of our boat crew members are qualified to a national standard, and we are DEFRA registered. That's the department that looks after all the flooding that goes on in the government department. So if there's any flooding in the area, or there's any flooding in the country, DEFRA will call on their qualified teams to go anywhere in the country, and we can do that as well to support that.
So you've given me a very comprehensive breakdown of what the search and rescue do. One of the things I wanted to ask is, how did it all start, and what's the history of the search and rescue organisation?
Yeah, sure. Well, for our team, in 2007, there were big floods in Worcester, and a group of guys who were into boats got together and started a team. They went, acted on response during those floods, and created what was at that point was the West Midlands Search and Rescue Team. Then, with changes in police boundaries, they were asked, I believe, to become West Mercia Search and Rescue, to look after the West Mercia area alongside the police. And at that time, we also became affiliated to Lowland Rescue, which, as I said, is a national organisation. So all of our qualifications are registered with and run by Lowland Rescue. So we qualify to national standards. That has some really good spin-offs because, in fact, I've seen an email this week. There's a guy who's moving into this area from Sussex, and he's a member of a rescue team in Sussex. And so if he can prove his qualifications through his training officer in the Sussex team, then he can join our team without actually going through the whole process again.
And how many people are involved in West Mercia? How many people can you call on?
Actually, some news that I saw this week is that another 12 people have just qualified through our training program this month, and there were four last month, so that's another 16. That takes us to about 70 active, operational, fully operational team members. Our ambition is to get to 100, but obviously that brings with it all sorts of problems of management of a team of that size. And part of what we're trying to do is that we have a very good reputation and presence in Shropshire, but obviously Hereford and Worcestershire are part of our remit as well. And so we're trying to build our reputation, we're trying to build what people know about us in those southern areas. So having 100 people spread across the whole area will mean that we can respond much more effectively.
What type of people get involved? You know, it's a voluntary organisation, and we see things about the RNLI, and, you know, obviously they are people involved in the sea mainly. What sort of people get involved in the search and rescue?
Well, we have no actual skills that are required from the word go, just a willingness to learn. There's a very basic fitness requirement if you're going to be an active land searcher, but it's a very simple one. You have to be able to walk 5 miles in 2 hours carrying the kind of kit that we normally carry. However, there is a amount of flexibility on that in that we are developing other roles within the team so that people who are less able can actually get involved. Everybody joins a team and qualifies as a search tech, like those 12 who've just qualified. And then you move on to other things. Then you'll decide to start taking water qualifications. Then you might do what I did, was I moved on and went on a number of courses to become a search planner, which meant that I could sit in the warm in the caravan that we have in the incident command unit and organize everybody else rather than go rushing around in the mud and the cold. But all of the jobs that we have, and then there is a coordinator of operations as well. And yeah, we work forward like that with people, also not only getting new qualifications, but many of those qualifications that we have, you have to renew them. There has to be continuous personal development with those so that everybody is up to speed throughout the year.
So are you autonomous? Is there certain bits of equipment or certain training that you have to have to continue? Or is there a standard which is a national standard which you have to reach?
Okay, there are national standards. So like I said, all of our search tech training is to a national standard so that it's interchangeable with other teams. Just to digress slightly, the other advantage of that is that when we have a search, and because we're all volunteers, we can't always get enough people to turn out, we can call on Staffordshire, Cheshire, Severn Area, rescue team. We know that their qualifications are the same, and therefore they can come and give us mutual aid, and vice versa, we can join them on the activities. But as far as our team is concerned, it's been our decision to have the resources inside our team that we have. So some teams are only land search. We have, as I mentioned, we have a boat team, rescue team, kayak team. We have a drone team. We are actually the only team in the country, I believe, who has quad bikes, because for our area, they are absolutely fantastic in terms of the large areas of woodland that you can cover. And also we have a purpose-built trailer for the quad bike, so you can use that in part of the recovery process as well. Some teams have of mountain bike sectors within their team. So there is no stipulation as to what you have in your team, but actually it has to be, whatever is there has to be to a certain standard.
I get that. And obviously, because you've got the River Severn running right through the area and a number of other rivers as well, you've also got the Shropshire Hills, which I suppose involves a certain amount of hill rescue as well.
Yep.
It's not like mountain rescue, I assume, but certainly hill rescue.
We basically wouldn't have the need to, but we wouldn't do a rope-based rescue. We have very basic rope skills. So, for instance, I actually did get engaged in a rescue on the side of Carcaraddock recently, where we had to actually lower a body in a stretcher down a steep slope. It wasn't a cliff, but I was able to use a very basic rope system to actually make sure that we were in control of what we were doing. And that's the maximum we would go to. But we have been called to people who've slipped and fallen on the Long Mynd, or indeed round Bridge North, you know, in the hilly bits. But essentially, we're not a cliff rescue team.
My knowledge of the search and rescue really comes from the missing persons program on the television. Mm-hmm. And you say you deal with people who have dementia and they wander off. And unfortunately, these people, they go off quite a bit as well, over and over again. Have you worked in a lot of those kind of rescues?
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And our whole planning system is based on the statistics that have been developed about missing people. So there's a famous book from America called Lost Person Behavior by a guy called Robert Custer. He's the acknowledged world expert. And what he did over a whole period of years was to collect data about where people were found depending on what their situation was. So did they have dementia? Were they despondent? He also goes into hiker, male, female, mountain biker, and all those sorts of things. So there's, I can't remember how many categories it is, but there's a lot of categories. And all of that has been added to by a research by Grampian Police and another researcher called iFind. And so all of that data now runs through our planning system behind it. It's computer-based and gives us information. So if we feed into it the age, the information we get from the police, what the condition of the missing person is, and where they were last seen, it plots it on the map and it gives us some indication of where, according to the statistics, might be the most likely place we would find those people. And so we would obviously search those first before we go anywhere else.
So it gives you sort of a starting point and a rough idea of what the behaviour of that person is likely
to be. For instance, dementia sufferers may well follow straight lines. So they will use hedges lines, fence lines, streams and walk along them until they hit something and bounce off, and that might then send them in another direction or it might just stop them. So we would use those features to actually help us to try and locate the person. Or autism, kids with autism often are attracted by flashing lights and light reflecting off water. So that would be one of our main clues if we were looking for a young person who suffered from autism. Are there any bodies of water nearby we need to look at?
So it's an incredibly involved process, and you're trying to second guess people, basically. Yeah. And as you say, there's a lot of data available which you call on. So you say you're looking to get 100 volunteers. What have you got, about 80 at the moment, did you?
We're 70 or 80? 70 qualified. We've got 15 who are non-operational at the moment. That might be because their qualifications have lapsed. It will also include our team of drivers and a logistics team who, thank goodness, turn up, pick the vehicles up, get the vehicles to the rendezvous points and generally look after us in terms of welfare, which is fantastic. When I joined the team, the team members had to do that as well as do the search.
I was going to ask about, do you need volunteers? I'll do that in a minute. What I want to talk about now is the equipment, the vehicles, the boats, the suits that you wear, because I know you wear special suits and everything. Tell me a little bit about that, where it all comes from and the cost as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Our basic kit, personal clothing, rucksacks, boots, etc., every team member is expected to provide their own.
And are these specialist items that they have to buy through you?
No, as long as they meet certain specifications, apart from the badged kit, and we have deals with organisations who sell us things at very much reduced rates and will come badged if we actually want them to do that. So our official badging is held with the manufacturers, and a couple of those are the two major manufacturers in the country who look after supplying search and rescue teams. Red is the colour that search and rescue uses, whether or not they're mountain rescue or lowland rescue. And the other equipment, et cetera, we have to provide. And so we try and provide that through the organisation. It can cost £2,000 to kit a guy out to go on the water. So it's a dry suit, a woolly thing underneath it, the boots, the gloves, the helmet, and all the kit that goes with the buoyancy aid, all the kit that goes with it.
And that's not including the boat that he's in.
And that's not including the boat he's in. So I try and look for grant money to pay for those things. We would not expect a member of the water team to pay for all of that kit themselves. So that gets paid for by the charity. And then I will look for grants that are appropriate for giving money for those things. So we did get one a few years ago from the Department of, that was from DEFRA again, which was to replace one of our boats, for instance. But other than that, we have to look locally for grants who are amenable to us to giving money for a cause like ours and for capital expenditure.
Do you get any money from local authorities, from the police, from the fire brigade, anything like that?
Yeah, because of our very close working with the police, for the last 3 years, we've had a grant from the Police and Crime Commissioner. And that has been to help us to pay for our accommodation, if you like, where we keep all the stuff. However, we're not sure what's happening now as we move forward, because obviously with the elections for the new Police and Crime Commissioner, so our three-year period finishes and we're in the last year of that at the moment. Other than that, we get no formal funding.
So in the same way as the Lifeboat Institute, you are completely funded through, as you say, grants and the goodness of the general public.
Absolutely. The good news for us is that we have no expenses apart from the team expenses. We have no full-time staff. We have nobody we're paying to do anything. And so all the money that comes in goes out to the team, to equipment, to our running costs, to whatever. And some people ring fence it, say this is specifically for Such and so, for instance, last year, Severn Trent Community Fund were very generous in donating us the money to put a new drone in the air. That was a great link because obviously that is used a lot over the River Severn, helping us with our searches in those areas.
Let's go back to the volunteers. So are you always looking for people to apply to volunteer?
We're always looking, and people can enter the team directly if they already have qualifications. I mentioned somebody transferring from another team, or if somebody has got equivalent qualifications, there might be very little for them to do, perhaps just learn our procedures. So if they've come from police or military, there could be a fairly direct route in. On the other hand, what we do is we get people to register with us, and then every year we run a recruitment program. So we started, I think it was last November, December time, and those guys that I've just been talking about are just coming out of that program now. People doing it at their own pace. Modules are repeated so that if somebody can't get there, recognizing everybody's a volunteer, they can't always get to every session, so they're repeated so people can fill all the boxes that they need to do to become a full team member.
What we'll do is we'll give all the contact information at the end so that people can get in contact with you, Andy, and get in contact with West Mercia if they are interested either in helping to raise money or actually volunteering to be part of the group. Talking of being part of the group, we're now going to go back to Rob, who's been sitting there very patiently listening to this. Now, I know you went on a little exercise with the West Mercia Search and Rescue couple of months ago, I think.
It was at the beginning of April, actually. Yeah, we were a bit surprised because it snowed on the Longmynd. it was sunny everywhere else and we got snow. It was quite enlightening how they run the training and with the costs involved as well. I mean, there was about 40 people there. Was
that right? Yeah. Can I just fill some background in? Because what it was it was the culmination of our training programs. So we had got over 40 people there, many of whom were about to qualify, and a lot of the existing members of the team turned out as well. And it was a series of mock searches, live scenarios, if you like, with dummies, but live scenarios.
I was on a team with two people that were still doing training. There was one guy who was qualified, but his time had lapsed a bit, so he was just brushing back up. And being from the military, we do a lot of training in certain ways. But I mean, 75% of the team was military. But the way that the guys that were qualified and leading the team, they still did it as training. And it was the way the training was done. It was all mentoring. It was a very team-based thing. There was no individual heroes, as it were. It was all team-based. So if one person needs to stop, the team stops. All along the way, they were asking questions, but not to try and test people, but as a mentoring piece, getting them to elaborate on their answers, and if they couldn't elaborate, answering the question with them. But also, they made use of different skills as well. So one of the guys that was training, he was also training to be a nurse. So when it came to the first aid bit, they called him in to help everybody else out because that's his skill set and that's he's the subject matter expert. And it was that cohesion that was quite inspiring. The thing that was really inspiring was some of the stories from the guys that were qualified and had been doing it for a long time, like Andy, about some of the calls they've been out on with happy endings and not so happy endings, and also the reaction they get from other people. I think on that exercise they got quite a few reactions of people looking because there was a lot of search and rescue milling about on the Longmynd, and the expense and the kit they've got. So the instant support unit, is that
the ICU? Yes.
Yeah. So that the control that's got a pneumatic mast on it for sticking an antenna up. I know Andy said about not having any permanent staff they have to pay, but when you consider the area that they cover and they've got to get vehicles all around that area, how much that's going to cost in fuel. And all the guys that were there, apart from the people that had driven the actual vehicles that were designed for the team, they'd gone in their own vehicles as well. So that's their own personal cost. But just the cost of fuel, I mean, I don't know how much it cost me to fill my car up, fill in a van and generators and everything else. Every person on the team had a radio as well. And I was told by someone that each of those radios cost £200.
It is incredible how much equipment, whenever I look at things about the RNLI, and I think how much of those lifeboats cost, and they're all bought using charity money, obviously. And it's the same sort of thing with the search and rescue. You know, you have those big four-wheel drive vehicles, don't you, that and all-terrain stuff. And they're not cheap.
No, absolutely not. So we do look for support in the purchase of new vehicles. And just picking up on what Rob was saying about cost, our treasurer worked out that it costs us about £200 for a vehicle to roll out of the unit. So in terms of our charitable collections, we're looking to try and make sure we get at least £200 if we're taking a vehicle there. Now, that's not a real cost, if you like, because we've already got the vehicle, but it's a very good indication of what it costs. And we do need to change our vehicles reasonably regularly to keep them serviceable. So, yep, we do look for funding to help us to do things like that.
And do you do, like the exercise that Rob went on, do you do many of those as well, training exercises?
So there are short training exercises every week. There's something going on. It could be online, it could be practical in the unit, or it could be a bigger exercise in some woodland somewhere. It could be a fitness walk taking place. Those happen every month. And then every few months is one of those major exercises that that Rob was talking about, where we try and pull all the skills together. So you go to an evening one, you might be doing stretcher carrying skills. Another one, you might be doing first aid. Another one, you might be doing navigation. Another one, communications with the radios. And then the big exercise pulls that all together. So again, just picking up on what Rob was saying, each team, as they set off, the team leader would understand what skills people already had, and then asking people to take specific roles. So there would be a first aider in the team. So you would become the appointed first aider. If we have a find, you're the one that does the stuff. We have a radio man, a comms man. There's somebody who'd do the navigating, etc. You might have a note taker as well. So if you do get a find, the first aider deals with the find, but is shouting out stats, blood pressures, pulse rate, etc., to go on a form that we fill in to make sure we've got all the information we need to hand over to an ambulance crew when they get there.
But what I wanted to ask about was, so they used an app as well. So everyone's got a phone, there's an app they use, and that's got all information about the person they're looking for and the kind of radius is it. Does that cost to keep up as well?
Yeah, we have so again, that's something that I managed to raise the money to buy the system through the generosity of, in fact, mostly Shropshire organisations. And then we now have I don't know whether it's monthly or annual, but a fee to pay to keep us up to date with it. It's a relatively new system, so we're helping the designers modify it all the time with our data going into it. But that's called SARSIS. And as Rob said, what happens is that we get the call from the police, that will go to one of our planners. The planner will open up SARSIS, will start planning with the information the police give us. Do we know where the person was last seen? In other information that's put into it. Then a call out gets sent to the team members, and all that information is then visible on the members' phones. So you can see what you're looking for as you're on your way to a particular call out, which is great, because occasionally we found out that the missed person has been found at the side of the road before you even got to the rendezvous. Somebody recognized, oh, a young girl with a pink rucksack. Whoops, that was her there. you know, that has actually happened twice to one of our search managers.
So it's about getting as much information in as possible, yeah, as well as using the data that you've got to try and second guess people. It's also having all that information about the actual person that is missing.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to run West Mercia Search and Rescue roughly a year?
I mean, various estimates, but the most recent ones are that it costs us about £70,000 a year to maintain the operation as it is. That covers training, all of the operational costs, but doesn't cover the replacement of our vehicles. If you, for the sake of argument, put a rolling five-year plan in for the replacement of all of our vehicles over that period, it goes up to anywhere between £100,000 and £120,000 a year that we need to find.
And that is totally through donations?
Apart from that existing Police and Crime Commissioner grant, that is all from the goodwill of people.
And if people want to find out more about it and maybe do donations, is there a website they can go to?
Yep, there is. Thank you, Mark. Yes, it's westmerciasar.org.uk.
And all the information is on there, how to donate, how to help, all the different things you need to know about them. There's a fantastic load of pictures and all kinds of things on there.
There are two ways that people can see us. One is via our website, and the other is that one of our major fundraising things that's happening at the moment is a festival of sport that we are running in Droitwich in July. It's going to be a fantastic family day, in essence, with lots of stalls, stands, lots of things going on, and the sport, which is an aquathlon, which is a competition. It is registered with the British Triathlon Association, but it is only two of the events. It's swimming and it's running, not the cycling. And it's short, and depending on the age groups, it's short. And it's round the grounds of the Droitwich Leisure Centre for its for the running part. And then there's a junior football competition going on, boys and girls teams, and the categories are all categories under 7, under 8, under 11, etc. And at the same time, we've just signed a deal with Rugby Tots organisation, which is a fantastic organisation which introduces young kids to the skills of rugby. And they're going to be running a session on the AstroTurf pitches there to let people have a go at rugby skills, passing, kicking, from any age. I think they work from 18 months upwards to try and get people engaged in the sport of rugby. So all of that is going on July the 7th. And the genesis of that, it came from our association with a young man who drowned in the river in Worcester, and we were involved in his recovery. And his family, his mother and father, have created a foundation called the Tom Jones Foundation, and we're working very closely with them. It's going to be called the Tom Jones Festival of Sport, and we're raising money for their foundation, for our search and rescue team, and for a local hospice as well off from that event.
Okay, and that's in...
July.
Okay.
July the 7th.
And what's the actual address?
It's at Droitwich Leisure Centre.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Worcestershire.
In Worcestershire, yeah.
It's just off the M5, isn't it?
It is just off the M5. Very accessible. It's tjfestivalofsport.co.uk, and that has got all the information about that event. It's got Tom's story on it, and it's got click-ons for going through to how you enter to all the different categories and events and so on. Or if people wish to sponsor us, because we're looking for sponsors for each of the events or for the whole event.
Okay, the other thing about donating as well is you can donate regularly, once a month, or you can do a one-off donation, however you want to do it. They need your money, basically. And you never know when you will need them as well, or someone you know may need them. So think about that when you're thinking, oh, what should I give my money to this year?
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. I'd like to say, if you're a company, especially based around the West Mercia area, I'm no accountant, but I'm sure there's some kind of tax thing if you give money to charity regularly as a business as well. So that could be your charity of the year. You can donate to them, or obviously if you donate to me, the money gets split between the two charities.
If I can pick up on what you said, Rob, about companies, I'd give a shout out to Paverways, who this week are finishing an offers dike walk. And tomorrow, a colleague and I are going along for the finish of that offers dike walk. They're raising funds for us. We are their charity of the year. So as part of their company social responsibility program, they are supporting us in all sorts of different ways, including a grueling walk up offers dike path in two directions. Then nobody's doing the whole lot, I don't think, but they're doing from the north, from the south, and meeting in the middle.
Just a quick comment about Andy. You're retired now, but this is what you do virtually full time, isn't it? Fundraising and...
It becomes a full-time job if you're not careful. But yes, no, I'm a volunteer and I am retired, looking for something to do. Perhaps not quite this much, but yeah, looking for something to do.
But I've met you at networking events before. You've been to a networking event already this morning. Yep. Now you're doing this.
Yep.
It's pretty much a non-stop for you, isn't it, I think, with Search and Rescue, which is great. And he does that for nothing. He doesn't get paid a penny for that.
But you feel proud to be part of a great group like that and to understand what we actually do. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking to the guys that I was with and to Andy, they are all volunteers, and that includes the fundraising. So when they have to go and stand outside of supermarkets and shake a tin and try and raise money, they're taking their time to that. So if people can donate to either them or do things to raise money or donate to me for them, then I think just looking at the fundraising in a different way.
You're raising money, obviously, for the two charities with your 100-mile walk, jog, crawl, whichever we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
What's the best way people can donate money?
The website, I'm using a company called GiveWheel. And to go onto the link for it, it's quite long. So if I give you my link tree, and it's at the top on my link tree, it's linktr.ee/chrysalis, spelled CHRYSALIS, _fitness. And if you put that in your browser, that'll take you to my link tree, and it'll be the very top link, and it's a give wheel, it's called, and that'll take you to, I think on my link tree it actually says like the challenges.
Okay, that is fantastic. Well,
can I do thanks, Mark. Yeah, no, I just wanted to thank Rob. We rely so much on members of the public in all sorts of ways, and some people find it easy just to put some cash in a box, and some people choose a very hard way to say thank you to us, and that's Rob. So he's doing this fantastic challenge, 200-mile events this summer, and Rob, you're fantastic putting yourself out to do that for us, and for Hope House as well, who are also a great charity. So our thanks to you in advance.
You're welcome. I mean, whatever I can raise, great. We'll see if it's a good idea come mid-September.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be talking in future episodes. I think we'll be talking a little bit more about your training and how you're going to ramp up your training a little bit when you get towards the events. What are the dates of the two events?
The first one is 27th of July. And the second one is the 14th of September.
Okay, so we'll be talking to Rob up to those, and finding out how he's getting on with his training. If you do want to know more about Chrysalis Fitness Training and Rob and what he does and what he can do for people, what's the best way to get in contact?
You can WhatsApp me on 07824 880311, or you can find me on Facebook, or you can email. It's rob@chrysalis-fitness.com. I know I've spelled it once before, but I'll spell Chrysalis again because some people struggle. So it's CHRYSALIS. So rob@chrysalis-fitness.com. And it's the same for the website, chrysalis-fitness.com.
Okay, well, I'd really like to thank Rob for yet again being here and talking about what he does and what he's going to be doing over the summer and into the late summer. And thank you very much to Andy for coming in and telling us all about what the West Mercia Search and Rescue do.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cheers, Andy. Thanks.
Cheers, yeah.
We'll be back at the end of May with another Body Mechanic podcast with Rob Arnold from Chrysalis Fitness Training. So until then, you look after yourself.
This is a 1386 audio production.